Now then, Alan Bastide is on line one. Hiya, Alan.
Hi, Mick. How you doing?
Good. Now, you're another not-so-old man, shall we say. You're of a younger age group than our previous contributors, but you, like yesterday's caller, Jennifer, you turned your life around. How did you do that? What did you do?
Yeah, I suppose in earlier life there, my early 20s, late teens, I kind of would have been heavily dependent on alcohol and drugs to try and get through life, I suppose. I was undiagnosed with ADHD at the time, which kind of makes a lot of sense.
Undiagnosed, you said, is it?
At the time I was,
Okay.
I got diagnosed last year. I got diagnosed last year with ADHD. So,
and what were your drinks and substances of choice?
Well, alcohol would have been anything, and cocaine would have been my drug of choice. And if you look into research on ADHD in adults, a lot of adults with ADHD do struggle with cocaine addiction because it affects people differently than it does the normal person with a normal brain. So it kind of slows things down as opposed to speeds things up, and, you know, it quietens down the brain a bit. And so you find that you can take copious amounts more than, say, a standard person because it doesn't affect you in the same way, which obviously has a negative impact then on your own mental health and body.
On your health, because it'll speed up your heart and dilate certain veins and that kind of thing, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And mental health-wise, like, you know, the highs come with massive lows then as well.
How did the ADHD manifest in you?
So I would have had what's called hyperfocus and hypersensitivity. So hyperfocus would be that if I'm interested in something or I get something into my head that I want to do, I won't stop until I do it, which can be positive and negative, like in terms of negative things like the drug addiction, things like that. Like if I wanted to do it, there was no stopping me in doing it, where it then later with the weight loss and changing my life around, when I put my focus into that, there was nothing stopping me with that either.
I mean, we'll get to the weight loss in a moment, but are you kind of half suggesting there that you have a brief period of OCD because of your fixation generated by the ADHD?
I suppose they're similar. They're similar traits. Like, you know, the other side of that then is if I don't have interest in something, you could offer me €1 million to sit down and do it, or I do it, and I couldn't. My brain physically will not allow me to do something if I have no interest in it.
Okay. What was it after you won the battle with alcohol and substance abuse that you put on the weight?
No, actually, it's funny enough, I probably would have been the fattest drug addict you've seen, to be honest.
Really?
I don't understand it either, because, like, normally when you're in that cycle of addiction with drugs and stuff, you don't eat. You sleep very rarely.
Yeah, because you'd often hear of top models. No names mentioned, of course, using cocaine as an appetite suppressant.
In the 80s and 90s, and even now, I suppose, but more so back in the 80s and 90s, a lot of models and people like that would have taken cocaine to lose weight. But no, for some whatever reason, had the opposite effect on me. I actually put on most of my weight from my late teens to the end of my 20s, I suppose.
Okay. Let's concentrate, as we did yesterday, just on the negative side of living through, you know, not just your ADHD, not just the alcohol dependency, the substance abuse, you put on the weight. You also had an attempt to end it all.
Yeah, so, like, I suppose there's two ways of looking at that. I had one official attempt at it where I just had enough. But then you could also say every time I left the house to go out was an attempt as well, because I was in such bad health and I knew that every time I went out, like, my heart could stop, or, you know, something could happen to me. But in terms of actually 2018, so I would have grown up in my grandparents' house. Like, my parents worked, my dad was in the Navy, my mother worked for the Southern Health Board, HSE. So I would have grew up with my grandparents, very close bond with my grandfather, so that all my love of sport, hurling especially, came through him. We would have spent every light hour of the day out pucking around somewhere at some match or something to do with hurling anyway. But I grew such a close bond with him that I kind of, again, with the hypersensitivity that I had, I didn't realise at that time, but I had this irrational fear that when he passed away, that was my life over, because I thought he was the only person that kind of really genuinely had my back when I needed it. Mm-hmm. And I kind of talked into existence. So when he did pass away in 2018, it didn't take a matter of hours before I had an altercation with the guards, Gary, and I had a couple of assault charges towards them and another person as well, where I had a 2-year long court case looking at going to prison for the assault charges. And this happened probably 3 or 4 hours after I buried my grandfather. So I was at a low point as it is at that point. And then when that, I knew this was going to lead to something even worse. All my family at that point then had contact with me. So I literally had very few people I could talk to, bar one or two. I lived in a small little cottage in Carrigtwohill, out in the middle of nowhere. And I was on a medication called, I could be wrong, I'm almost certain it's called Seroquel. It's an antipsychotic drug. It's 300 milligrams, very, very heavy dose. When you take it, that's it. I had to use it for sleep. So if I took it at, say, 9 or 10 at night, I'd still be very, very dozy at 2 or 3 the next day after one tablet. So I took a slip of 12 of them. And I woke up roughly 48, between 2 and 3 days later, on the floor in the same position, on the sitting room floor in that little cottage out in Carrigtwohill. And the waking point for me was, the first thing I did was kind of check my phone, and I had no missed calls, no messages, no one was looking for me, no one. I could have been there for I don't know how long.
But you had to check what day it was. How much time did I lose?
So I thought I just slept overnight. I didn't realise, but in my groggy state, I realised that it was a lot longer. No one had reached out.
Nobody cared, you thought?
That's what I thought, yeah. And I didn't, for whatever reason, I could have looked at that as a negative to try again. But whatever happened, it was a kind of deciding factor to go, right, well, there's no one coming to save you. You have to do this yourself. And the kind of, I suppose, the comeback then started from that point. Not the weight loss, but the mental comeback to get my life back together started at that point then.
Okay. So you're at rock bottom, at the bedrock, as they say. What sort of physical condition were you in?
Oh, that was at my heaviest then. So I was 28 stone at that point. Really, really heavy. Couldn't really get around very well. Like, simple day-to-day tasks, like even driving a car, were tough. Putting on shoes to be out of breath. I had stairs in the cottage. Getting up and down the stairs, I'd be out of breath. Just mental health, like, just, you know, it's just horrific to be in that condition.
Okay, so not a lot going for you at that stage, except finding the mental capacity and, you know, the attachment to the mental capacity that I'm going to take a step at a time and get out of this.
Exactly, yeah. So the first step that I decided in my head was, I need to get away from Cork. I need to get away from my surroundings. I need to a fresh start somewhere else. I need to get a new job. So that's where I began looking. And it was at that point then obviously, I was very lonely at that point. I had no contact with a lot of people. So whether it be right or wrong, I went down the route of the online dating apps. And at the time, it was more so just for probably even just the social side of it, because I was talking to no one. I seen no one. I was in contact with nobody, really. And I met my partner at that stage, she's from Dublin, but she was living in Leitrim. Working in stables down in Leitrim with horses, and we got chatting, and a couple of weeks later I decided to travel up, and this then came into around the time of COVID. So it was a bit after the time the attempt on my life. So it was just around the start of COVID in March when I started traveling up and down, and I got, I'd say, probably about 15, 20 minutes from Ballinamore and Leitrim when they announced the first lockdown. And we got a phone call in the job I was in to say that we were being furloughed for the foreseeable, so we're basically being paid, but we're to stay at home. So I never went back to Cork. At that point, I stayed in Leitrim.
Did you take that as maybe a little bit of a divine intervention?
Absolutely, because it was around that time where I started, you know, getting out walking, starting to feel a bit more positivity and see a bit of a future for myself. And then the whole world closed down. And for a lot of people, that probably had a negative effect. But for me, it opened up my world completely, because I didn't need to be anywhere for anyone. I didn't need to do anything. I was under no pressure. I could train when I wanted to train. I could walk when I wanted to walk. We had all the time in the world for cooking proper food. It did. It opened up my life completely.
Yeah. So you're now in this cocoon, really, of positivity, and that you're doing it yourself for yourself. Did you go cold turkey? Because moving would you know, remove yourself from your dealer or supply network, as it were. Did you do that at the same time?
Yeah, I went cold turkey in terms of I got clean and I stayed sober for 2 years off alcohol. During the court proceedings, so I was on probation for the whole time of the court proceedings. So like most cases in Ireland, they drag on for a very long time. But that actually benefited me, because the longer it went on, the longer I could show that I was staying sober, staying out of trouble, moved away, got my apologies to the people involved, and just basically got time to show that it wasn't a true showing of my character, basically.
So you didn't get a custodial sentence or anything?
No, in the end, I ended up getting substantial fines, which I had absolutely no problem with paying. If you look at the alternative of a prison sentence, I don't know how that would have impacted me going forward. But yeah, in the end, I got numerous amount of fines for each charge, which again, I didn't mind paying. But I stayed kind of clean since. I wouldn't say, I'm not an advocate to say I'm clean and sober, because I'm not sober. My issue was always with the drugs, that they came hand in hand with the mental health the mentality of drinking. When I removed myself from all those situations and places that I was, I am, I suppose, in a way, lucky enough that I can socialise to an extent.
So you're a social drinker now?
I am, yeah. I still enjoy a night out. Like, I'm not fully sober, Anthony. I know my limits. I know where I can and can't be. I just have to be careful. Will it last forever? Probably not. I probably will have come to a point where I give it up completely, because it does still have an impact. Like, I have to be very clear on that with the ADHD. Part of that is you don't create dopamine naturally, or very little amounts of it. So the alcohol gives you a very fast burst of dopamine. But as the saying goes, what goes up must come down. Yeah. So when people feel like they're at home and they have anxiety and they feel like, oh, what do they say to this person, that person after a night out? Most people my generation get that, but I get that multiplied by 100.
Okay, and at what stage of your recovery, or before the recovery, was the ADHD officially diagnosed? And did that diagnosis aid in your recovery?
No, this came way after. Like, I only just got, I started going to a psychologist in the last number of years. Since the court case, I started going to a psychologist during the court proceedings, and I still go now. I find it very beneficial for me. But it was during that process we kind of came. So my psychologist would never suggest a diagnosis or that she thinks I have certain things. She let me speak, and one day I came in and I started talking, and I thought I had bipolar. So then I started doing research on bipolar, and I found that the similarities between bipolar and ADHD are very similar, but the not to the extreme extent.
Okay.
So then I started looking into ADHD.
That can be medicated anyway, and you're on that journey now, yeah?
No. So again, I have no issue with people that want to go down the route of getting ADHD medication if they feel that's best for them. But I spent a lot of my life on medication suppressing feelings, and
I have
an irrational fear I basically want to be myself, and I feel I can control it to a certain extent. It's a learning day every day with it, but I want to stay away from it as long as possible. If it comes to the point where I have to do it, I will. But at the moment, I'm kind of enjoying my hyper-focus is on ADHD.
That's brilliant. More power to you, Alan. Look, my brain tends to work in stones rather than kilograms, but you reached almost 170 kilos and you lost more than 80 kilos.
Well, yeah, so when I was at my heaviest in 2018, I weighed 168 kg. And then when I started the weight loss journey, I suppose, the officially started this and documenting it, I was 156.6 kg. And now on the scales, I'm just 100.1 kg.
Okay.
But there's about 7 or 8 kg of loose skin that I have left over that is also weighs something. So when I do eventually get that taken off, that'll take off about another 7 or 8 kg, bringing me down around the 90 mark.
That's incredible.
So yeah, it's a full person.
How would you describe the journey? You're almost running in parallel lines here, because you're building yourself up mentally, you're repairing yourself and getting healthier physically. What were the stepping stones that are there incremental positive signs that reinforce your mental from the physical, and tell you, you know, give you the impetus to keep going?
I actually had this discussion with the shopkeeper this morning when I was picking up the Echo. There was an article in the Echo about me this morning, and I was picking it up, and I was actually talking to the shopkeeper with that, and she made a point to say that, because when I moved back to Cork, I was living in Glenville first, just in between Watergrass Hill and Glenville, and I was regularly going in and out to the shop, and, you know, she was always supporting me. She always seen me out walking. But she made a point this morning to say, you never once looked like you were under any pressure to do this, or you never looked like a person that, you know, that was there, but their whole mind was taken up with this journey that you were doing. It just, she seemed to just to take it in your step. And it kind of dawned on me then this morning that she's kind of correct in what she's saying, because I've often tried to lose weight before and got so far and gave up for whatever reason it might be. And the only thing I could put it down to is that I was always just doing it for myself, and my own self-worth was probably not enough to continue to want to do the full thing and get the weight off. And the difference, I think, was when my daughter was born in 2021. It became more so about her than it did me. And I always kind of say to clients that I have now is that until you find your why, you won't achieve your goals, because you have to have something, that there's a reason, you have to find your reason to do something. And I obviously never had that reason before, because I didn't have enough self-worth to want to do it for myself. But becoming a dad then was probably, well, not probably, was the best thing to ever happen to me. And any accolades, any trophies, any medals, any weight loss, anything I've achieved to date isn't a patch on becoming a dad. It was the best.
Okay, I fully get that, because you can be on the train tracks of how, and you're driving along and the speed varies, but you're on those tracks getting to your destination. But the train can be derailed unless you find the why.
Absolutely. There's always going to be issues. Like, there's always going to be something come up in life. Like, life is never easy. And this generation as well seems to be, like, that my age group, I looked into it a lot. Like, I think the generation that I come from suffers a lot in terms of different lifestyles. I know each generation beforehand will say that they had a hard, and there was different issues why, but I do feel that our age group kind of fell into the wrong side of history. And it is a real struggle. So I always say to people, like, that if every time something goes wrong, you use that as an excuse to be unhealthy or to make the wrong choice, you're never going to get anywhere. Like, there's always going to be problems in life. You just have to just get on with them and work alongside. Your goals don't have to stop because a bill came in the door that you weren't expecting, or anything that might put you into a bad state of mind. You just have to keep on going.
Okay, Alan, we've never spoken before, and I haven't read that piece about you in The Echo, which I will. But just in talking to you, don't appear to me to be a kind of a guy who would be in the position he's in today without making some amends or some apologies or some reparation, if you like, to those that you may have stood upon or leaned upon during your dependency and in the alcohol-fueled days of that drug dependency. You must have burned a lot of bridges. Did you set out to repair those bridges?
Oh, absolutely. Like, you know, I'll always carry that guilt always, and it's something that I'll never probably get over. But instead of letting it get me down, I kind of use it to motivate me to be the best person I can be. And I think that's why I went into coaching. I love coaching the underage hurling teams. You know, I get a great satisfaction out, because they were the ages where I struggled the most. And where I gave up the sports that I loved is the ages that I'm coaching at the moment. So I get a really, really big satisfaction from coaching the hurling teams. I get a great satisfaction in my own clients that I have for weight loss and for whatever goals that they have.
Well, there's your own dopamine generator, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it fuels my social gauge as well, because I am a very social person. You know, I like being out and about with people. I love having conversations with people. I love getting to know people. I didn't for a long time. Like, I still really, really struggle now to find close bonds, I suppose. Like, I have a lot of colleagues, I have a lot of acquaintances, but not a lot of close people. And the only reason why that is that I, from a long time, from my teens up to even recently, like, you know, a lot of people my age have either passed away through addiction or from other health conditions. I have friends that are doing life sentences in prison that had a massive impact on my mental health and view on relationships that I had over the years. So I do find it very hard to form close friendships now in the fear of getting hurt.
Well, you've certainly come full circle, Alan. You've found a new purpose in life. You've brought yourself back mentally and to physical health as well. How can people get in touch? You do weight loss programs, do you, and motivational stuff or what?
Well, it's all, yeah. So I do online coaching. I do online coaching for whatever goals you are, whether it be weight loss. I have clients that want to lose weight, gain weight, put on muscle, just have gym programs made up from meal plans, just education around nutrition. Anything really, anything what your goals are, I can kind of help out when it comes to health and fitness. I work through mostly, I don't have a website, I work all through Instagram, AB Fitness Coaching on Instagram. If anyone wants to reach out to me, even if it's just for a chat, there's absolutely no problem there. There's no obligation to sign up or anything. Just have a chat with me, and if there's something I can help with, I will.
Okay.
I do it all through Instagram, really, yeah. I do run fitness classes on Tuesday nights in Watergrass Hill, circuit classes, which are going well. But yeah, that's kind of, I have a day-to-day job as well. Like, that's all. I obviously get paid, but it's more of a hobby. Like, I do have a career in the fire and security industry as well that takes up a lot of my time day-to-day. But
you're a busy man. You are testament. You are testament that recovery is possible. Whatever position you find yourself in, whether that's with weight, mentally, physically, dietary, you did turn your life around losing that 80 kg, and you're in a great place. It's been lovely to talk to you. I can't believe how much time has gone by. I could talk to you all day, as they say. Alan, thanks a million.
No, listen, I appreciate having you on. And as I said, if anyone wants to reach out, there's absolutely no problem, even if it's just for a chat to see if there's any assistance I can give around getting goals going and stuff like that. I'd be more than happy to help.
All right. AB Fitness on Instagram.
That's the one.
Alan Busty, thank you and good morning.
Thank you, sir. Cheers.